Thanks for listening to Other People's Flowers. If you'd like to have your work featured on the program, please send it to editor@otherpeoplesflowers.com. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Peter J. Stavros is a writer in Louisville, Kentucky. His work has appeared in the Saturday Evening Post, the Boston Globe magazine, the East Bay Review, Hypertext magazine, Fiction Southeast, Duped, and Literary Orphans, among others. Peter has also had plays produced, including as part of the Festival of Ten at the College at Brockport, SUNY, for which he was named Audience Choice Winner. More can be found at www.peterjstavros.com. 20 Good Years. Sadie can't sleep, claims there is a restlessness in the air. She can feel it somewhere, and it won't leave her be. At night she tosses and turns, mumbling something I don't quite understand. Then in the morning she'll be gone. I find her downstairs, curled up on the love seat in the living room, her grandmother's crocheted blanket strewn across her body, a bare arm, a bare leg, hands to her face, angel's pose, I think of it. Too peaceful to disturb, so I wait for her to stretch and stir on her own as I start a pot of coffee and toast a bagel in the kitchen. Sadie says we're not who we're supposed to be. She's not sure who we're supposed to be, but it's not this, can't be. We are walking through our neighbourhood after dinner, the leftover pork roast Sadie cooks every Sunday in the crock pot, puts it in before she rushes off to church to sing in the choir while I stay home to putter in the garden. It is a typical humid Louisville August evening, with any breeze that happens by like opening the door of a hot oven. Sadie is 50, soon to be 51, another month thereabout. She handled turning 50 fine enough. Better than expected, better than me. She was the last of our group to make the transition and had time to prepare. I turned 50 a few months earlier. Just put my head down and barreled through. No birthday cake, no black balloons, no looking back. Low and fast, not pausing to linger, not searching for revelations. I wanted that day over. Over and done with. Sadie chose to get away for her birthday, perhaps on the off chance that 50 wouldn't find her in Key West in a quaint pink and green bungalow tucked beneath the plush canopy trees in Old Town, sequestered from the ruckus of Duval Street. But 50 found her, as it found us all. Wake up, and sure enough, there it is. Still, turning 50 with a shot of Herradura and a platter of Royal Reds at Alonzo's by the marina seemed to take the sting out for Sadie. The sting of too many shots of Herradura was another matter. Maybe this year will be different. Better, maybe, Sadie said, as we toasted the sunset at Mallory Square amongst the acrobats and sword swallowers and snowbirds staggering off the towering cruise ships in their pastel resort wear. Maybe, I offered back, and then, I'm sure it will. As I pulled her closer, inhaled the lilac in her hair, tasted the salty sweat from the nape of her neck. Truth be told, Sadie doesn't look 50. Everyone tells her that, and I have to agree. To me, she is the same as when she walked into my dorm room those many years ago. A whole lifetime before. At 3-something in the morning, rosy-cheeked and determined, with a head full of plans and no reservations. And announced that we had to leave, just take off, get the fuck out, to somewhere, anywhere, before that chapter of ourselves came to a close. She just walked into my room and said that it didn't matter that I was in bed, asleep, with someone I might have known. But what Sadie didn't know is that I was already ready to go, wherever she wanted, on a moment's notice, or no notice at all, had been ever since our paths crossed on a freshman move-in day, waiting in line for dorm assignments, when my stuffed and strained backpack split apart at the seams, belching its contents onto the quad. Sadie on her hands and knees next to me laughing, making it into the joke that it was. Helped me coral my ship, and we hadn't even met yet. I knew then, as I caught her gaze, those blue eyes, that I would go anywhere with her, and nothing has changed there. Sadie's the same, older, but aren't we all? A little beaten back by the twists and detours of life. But who isn't? Yet still the same. Sadie says we only have 20 years left. 20 good years left. that she's done the math, and that seems about right. I suspect it's that math that's been keeping Sadie up at night, one of the reasons at least. Her brain running on overdrive, just like in school when Sadie would be the last to leave the library during finals. I would see her when I was leaving the hideaway after last call. 20 good years, if we're lucky, Sadie clarifies, before everything falls apart. Sadly, Sadie is all too aware of falling apart. Having watched her parents fall apart and how swiftly those poor souls went, and others she's been close to, just fall apart to nothing and disappear and gone. Sadie doesn't want that. Not for her, not for me, not for us, not when there's too much left to do and we're not who we're supposed to be, not even close. Just 20 good years, she repeats, her voice dropping to barely above a whisper, saying it more for herself than for me, no doubt echoing an idea that's been circulating inside her for a while. We walk past the Johnson's house, the two-story beige and brown Tudor, on the corner that's burned twice on the same day back in April, charred around the edges and boarded up with 2x4s. Rusted dumpster in the front yard, a yellow plastic beach chair abandoned there from when the entire neighbourhood came out to watch, an impromptu block party occasioned by the smouldering blaze. That's all we have left, Sadie completes her thought, the smell of burnt, just burnt, still seeping from what remains of the Johnson's house. Nothing anymore but a wooden cut-out backdrop from a movie set. We walk the rest of the way in silence, our regular route, our constitutional, Sadie calls it, up one street and down the next, and over, and over, and over some more, until eventually we're back at our house, the same pattern up one street and down the next, as children gaggle and play and enjoy the last idle days of summer before school starts, and dogs bark, and people grill out or cut their grass or push their trash, and recycling to the curb. We walk in silence because Sadie is processing something. I can tell, the distant stare, the stiffened pose, the twitching in her fingertips. I don't dare disturb her. Don't say a word. She wouldn't hear me anyway. Later, much later, after glasses of Chardonnay and 2 futile hours spent, or wasted, on an impossible jigsaw puzzle that has got to be missing pieces. Upstairs and tucked into bed. I am shaken from what must have been a compelling dream, since it left me dry-mouthed and flushed, but with any memory of it vanishing the instant I awaken by the sudden shifting of the mattress and the squeaking of box springs. I glance across at the clock and it's 4:10. Sadie slips out of the room. What has become her ritual at night, a patch of light from the hallway escaping briefly beneath the crack in the door that slowly shuts behind her. I hear the creaking of the steps as Sadie makes her way down the stairs and across the hardwood floor in the living room, and then silence. I imagine a gentle exhale of cushions collapsing around her as Sadie positions herself on the love seat, curling up beneath her grandmother's crochet blanket, angel's pose, eyes closed. I roll over, reach a hand out to where Sadie was lying, on her side of the bed, what has always been her side of the bed. From college, when she walked into my dorm room and plopped herself beside me and said we had to leave. I scoot nearer to that spot, still warm from Sadie, and I drift back to sleep. In the morning when I go downstairs, head to the kitchen, expecting to pass Sadie in the same position, asleep in the love seat, she's not there. The blanket neatly folded over the arm, the love seat undisturbed, cushions patted and fluffed. I notice on the coffee table, where we had left for dead the partial skeleton of the impossible jigsaw puzzle, a stack of papers. All sorts of papers. Loose leaf pages and sheets of yellow legal pad scribbled with notes in red and black and blue ink, and articles ripped from magazines and newspaper clippings. Entire passages and paragraphs circled and highlighted, and a map, folded. Not how it was originally folded, because it's near impossible to fold a map back to how it was originally folded, but folded nevertheless. I recognise Sadie's writing, hardly the neatest to begin with, and especially sloppy, generally illegible, words bleeding into words, into words, into long, indecipherable sentences. Sadie's hand apparently unable to keep pace with the thoughts that were spilling from her mind. Some of the pages have rows and columns of numbers, the math that's been keeping Sadie up at night. But that's none of it. From what I can tell, math never being my strength, adding up to anything of consequence. I call out Sadie's name, peek around here and there, the dining room, the study, the kitchen, even the pantry. But nothing. Nothing but the sound of the air conditioner kicking on with a rattle of hard metal from the unit outside that we fear is on its last legs and should be looked at by someone who knows what to look for in air conditioner units, yet we resolve to wait until it breaks. Certainly at the worst possible moment. But no Sadie. Nothing. I figure she might have gone out for a stroll. Or an early bike ride, before the suffocating mass of humidity descends for another day. So I return to the coffee table and peruse these papers, these notes and outlines and figures that Sadie has jotted down in some fit of inspiration. And I lose track of the time. And I ignore that I should be ready for work, and I neglect to start a pot of coffee or toast a bagel in the kitchen. Too fixed on this, whatever it is. What is this? Until I hear a key slide into the deadbolt on the front door. I look up to see the knob jiggle and turn and the door push open. A burst of sunlight splashing into the living room as Sadie walks in carrying two tall styrofoam cups in a cardboard tray and a grease-stained brown paper bag. Oh good, you're still here, Sadie says casually, as if it's a lazy weekend and not mid-morning, mid-week. I got coffee and bagels, and look, she holds up the bag, shakes it. They had the smoked salmon you like. When Sadie sees me hunched over her papers, she sets everything down on a TV's tray and bounds over to squeeze next to me on the love seat. You see, she motions to the table, to nothing in particular. I've done the math and we can do this. Do what? I ask, feeling like I'm the one who walked in on her in the middle of something. And I guess I am. What is all this? The math, she says, sighs, frustrated, as if the answer could not be more clear. And we can do this. Do what? Go, before it's too late. I wait for more, because there's always more with Sadie. And there is, but just more of the same. More of what Sadie has already been saying, what she first said to me that whole lifetime before that made me fall for her, that made me want to go away. Sadie says we have to leave, take off, get the fuck out, and she knows where. She just walks into the house and says that. It doesn't matter that it's 10-something in the morning and I should be at the office, answering the phone, responding to emails, meeting with people I don't care to be meeting with, daydreaming into an inbox full of things I should do, tugging at the collar of my starched white dress shirt to loosen my tie. We have to go, she repeats, excited, the way she gets when she's convinced she's right about something and it's everyone else who doesn't have a goddamn clue. I've done the math and we can do this, but we need to go now. Sadie pauses. She must recognize the blank stare on my face, still no closer to understanding. So she reminds me, softer, slower, lower. 20 good years, if we're lucky. It's all we have left. Sadie takes a deep breath, in through her nose, out through her mouth, pries the plastic lid off her styrofoam cup of coffee, and patiently begins to explain her plan to me. I sit there and I settle in, as Sadie breaks it down, her typically unruly curls tinged with grey, falling as they may, Sadie blowing the few strands out of her face with a puff of the air pushed through her pursed lips. I sit there and I sip from my styrofoam cup of coffee, and I nibble on the toasted bagel with the smoked salmon I like, and I listen while Sadie goes on and on, arguing her thesis, her dissertation, expounding the math that has been keeping her up at night. And as she speaks, as Sadie tells me this, I start to understand. I do, and it makes sense to me. It does. What she proposes for us. But as she speaks, shuffling through the papers like courtroom trial exhibits, unfolding the map, wringing it out like a wet towel, I find myself focusing less on what Sadie says than on how she says it. I'm already in. I was in when Sadie walked into the house with a burst of sunlight. Well, before that, actually. Instead, I find myself focusing just on Sadie, on seeing her again, like this. Because it's been a while since I've seen Sadie like this. She's alive how I remember her to be, before everything in the middle from where we started out to where we ended up became dense and heavy, before all of the bullshit and disappointments and lows that weighed us down. Because of all that, and more, when I was helpless to do anything about it. And seeing Sadie like this makes me feel alive again too, and I fall for Sadie. Again. I already want to go away with her. I always have. Nothing has changed there. And so I do. I go away with Sadie, the two of us, a week later, after getting our affairs in order, which takes longer now than it did when we were 22, driving south on I-95, our SUV crammed with as much crap as we can carry, the rest of our belongings with the rest of our life, the life we have been leading, in storage. Indefinitely, the two of us, Sadie and I, setting out together to open this new chapter of ourselves, onto this new course that Sadie has painstakingly plotted and charted through all those many sleepless nights. And I trust her with that, unconditionally, because I love her like that, unconditionally. And Sadie still wants me to go away with her, so we do, we just leave, take off, get the fuck out, to make the most of these 20 years that Sadie says we have left. 20 good years if we're lucky. And I believe we are.
Other People's Flowers was produced by Hugo Gibson, Chris Kamonvutitam, and Hamish Adam Cairns. If you'd like to have your work featured on the show, please send it to editor@otherpeoplesflowers.com. Thank you for listening.